Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of South Geek News. I am Donovan. That is Ben over there on the other side of the table.
Hola.
So what's instead of doing every 2 weeks, we jumped in because of holidays, Thanksgiving, because you're going to be out of town next week, and that would have landed us when you're going to be out of town. I don't think you want to try to do the show while you're out of town. So here we are.
We could do remote, but this is better.
Yeah, this is better. That's the reason why I built this. I mean, it's it's not the end all of where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if Tyler had his way, that entire section over there, I'm motioning across the way, would not be a shop anymore. It would actually be a studio. But
just tell him to send a check and we'll get it done.
He told me, don't be surprised one day. Remember, that's when I said, pay off the house for me first. But, well, since it's only been a week, how have you been? What's been going on?
Just pushing. We're pushing for end-of-the-year projects. That's always fun times.
Do you, in your experience, because you've been doing this, what, 10 years now?
I'm about to close out my 10th year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because I started mine about May of 2015.
Yeah, and I started...
You started a few months.
It was January 2015, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of had no choice. I felt, you know, it is what it is. In your experience over those years, how many times have you had clients that waited to the fourth quarter and specifically the last 2 months of the fourth quarter to go, we need to get these things done?
Ten times.
Yeah.
Well, there's been a couple, in end of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, nobody was interested in that.
Of course not.
But it's picking back up, and given the results of the election, they're not so hesitant to spend money. But yeah,
I wonder if it mattered. But depending on who won, you know, just as a curiosity,
yeah, I would be
if
curious.
If it had gone the other way, would it still have been?
They might still do some projects. You know, people made money this year.
Yeah,
they might still do projects, but they might not do as much.
I've had it a couple of times, and I usually, I sent out an email Monday letting everybody know that I was closed starting next Tuesday through Friday, which I'm always off on Fridays unless we do stuff that I especially schedule it, because I got one client, they work until 2 o'clock and then they're off for the rest of that afternoon. So if I need to go in and do anything, I can.
Yeah.
And I usually do the same type of thing around Christmas time. So 1 year I had a client that bought another business and absolutely knew that I was off those days and said, we need you to come in anyway. And I was like, are you kidding me? And I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Tell them to fuck off? No.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'll give you this day. And all it was to go in and look at things, make an assessment. And I said, okay, now next week we'll come back and figure out what it is that we need to do, but I'll come in. Spend a couple hours and look at it. Fortunately, as they've gotten to know me better and I've gotten to know them better, they have a tendency, knock on my hard head, they have a tendency not to do that kind of stuff anymore.
Yeah.
No. Or they'll at least try to give me a heads up saying, hey, we're gonna need to do this, you know, week before Thanksgiving or the week before Christmas or something like that. Because remember those 12 iPads I was telling you about last week?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're doing those this week. Yeah. I don't know if I really want to talk about it on this one or not. I did an episode this morning of my personal podcast, Call Me Donovan, which was about my alcohol retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I need to start dubbing these my driveway walking talks, because I put on my lapel button microphone and I just walk up and down, you know, recording it on my phone. But the short of it is this: I got a call about a potential issue of speed over the Wi-Fi network when they finally got there and started, I guess, trying to train or get things going or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I didn't realize it until later, 30 seconds into that phone call. Now, this was talking to the manager, and then he put me on speaker, and I was kind of talking at the other people. I had a panic attack.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't realize what it was at the time. But like I said, within, I answer the phone. I know who it is. I answer the phone, And he's like, hey, we got the folks here training. They've done speed tests on these iPads, and it's terrible. It's not good. And I'm like, what are you getting, and where are they testing against? And while he was, while I was waiting to get that information, I realized I was having trouble breathing. And I was like, what the fuck is going on here? And then, so I got up and I'm walking around this office and I'm doing this like that, trying to get my damn breath and trying to carry on a conversation at the same time. And the short of that one is there was, I believe that whoever wrote their tech specs, their technical document, was not a technical person, because one of the things that they put on their technical document was they wanted to know the SSID of the Wi-Fi network and the password, and they specifically said it needed to be a 2.4 or a 5, not both. Now, in hindsight, I believe what they were getting at was they didn't want to have to choose between two different networks, and whoever wrote the document doesn't understand there's a such thing called band steering that works. So for whatever reason, and I think it had to do, later I looked at some stuff, and I think it had to do with a potential interference problem, I created this network as a 2.4 because you're going to get the furthest range. You're not going to get the best bandwidth. You know, you're going to top out at about, I don't know, 144 or something like that. They were getting 2.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know where they were testing. I know they were in the general area, but I think after I started looking at some stuff, I've got a secondary access point in there that I need to retire. It's an old Ingenious unit. Mm. And I believe it was on the same channel as these other units on the 2.4. Because what I had them do is I had them swap over to the normal Wi-Fi network that they use, do the speed test, 200. So what I did is I went back in and I said, okay, I'm slapping the 5 onto this other SSID. And it reconfigured. And I said, y'all let me know if you have any more problems. I haven't heard a damn thing from them. So I'm going to presume that, you know, and I've been looking in the controller. I've been looking at each one of the devices. I've been looking at the quality.
Yeah.
Most of them have links of like 1.2 gigabit. Some of them, you know, and the signal levels are hovering anywhere from like negative 48 to negative 60, which is absolutely phenomenal, you know, so there shouldn't be any problems there. But yeah, it was so weird. And like I said, I kind of rehashed it on this, but it was the damnedest thing. And I guess it was because as I pointed out in my other podcast, I felt I'm a control freak. I've got to be able to control things as best I can. You know, I've talked to you about my finances. I control all the finances. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that I'm a tyrant or a king or anything like that. It's just, you know, the responsibility of this family is on my shoulders. And so yeah, I got to have that control. And so suddenly here I am faced with, I spent several hours getting all these devices working. I never once tested the speed, didn't figure I needed to.
Yeah.
You know.
Really not something that comes to mind, especially if you built the network.
I built the network.
Yeah.
And my first question to the manager was, are any of the PCs that are in the other area that are connected via Wi-Fi, are they having any problems? And he said, no. Okay. Then why the hell would these be having? Okay. So anyway. And I think that's what happened is something in my brain just went, you have no control over this. What the fuck is wrong? And what are you going to do about it? And it's 11:45 and you need to go fix lunch.
Just kind of put you out of your expected path for the day, huh?
I guess. And I don't recall ever feeling that. You know, I've had things like that that's irritated me, but I've never once like suddenly start having laborious breathing, like, okay, I'm about to pass out here if I don't calm the fuck down. So yay. So Donovan Adkiss killed by information technology. So okay, two things, actually kind of three things, to on our catch up. So do you have any clients who use Office 365?
Almost all of them.
Okay. You do the management through the admin.microsoft.com, yeah. Right? Okay. I don't know if you saw this, and I don't know what they were doing because it's reverted now, but so I don't know how you manage this, but this is how I do it. So I go to admin.microsoft.com. Mm-hmm. All right. And of course it usually defaults me into probably the last account that I was already in.
Yeah. I open up a new incognito or in private window, and that's it reduces confusion on where you're signed into.
Well, that's true. But the cool thing is normally over in the right-hand corner, you know, there's a little circle. Mm-hmm. And like my business will say like DA or something like that. And so normally I just click over there and I get a drop down of all of the ones that I can log into. And so I'll choose it. So one day last week, I think it was, I was trying that was missing. In its place was down below that there was a bar and there was the company name. And I'm like, I was in my company, Office 365. And I was like, I need to get into another one. And I'm looking all around this thing and I'm like, I cannot figure out where's my profile thing? It was missing.
Yeah.
I tried it. That was an Edge. I tried it in Firefox. Same thing. It was missing. I got on the Mac Mini over there. Tried it again. It was missing. I'm like, what the hell's going on with this? I tried to do some searches. Couldn't find anybody that was having the same exact problem that I was having. My workaround was to actually go to office.com, log in there, and it gave me the profile selector. And then once I chose the one I wanted, then I could click admin and it would take me to the admin.microsoft.com. Yeah. So I put this in here. I said, new pet peeve, Office 365 Admin Center no longer has the profile icon in the top right corner of the screen where I can swap to different Office 365, Microsoft 365 accounts to manage. And now I have to go to office365.com, log in there, then choose the admin option at the bottom of the icons listed on the left side of the browser. What the fuck, Microsoft? I discovered this on November 15th. Then it came back on November 18th is the next time I had to get in, and it was back the way it was supposed to be. So I didn't know if you had seen anything like that, or maybe they were doing some testing or something, and then they were like, no, this isn't going to work. Because that is a huge pet peeve of mine is when you're accustomed to doing something the way you manage things, and then someone like Microsoft or Google goes, you know what?
Your workflow should change today.
It should.
Yeah.
And it usually changes when you're right in the middle of crunch time having to fix something for somebody, and you're like, I don't know where to go now. You know, I know where they can go. The company, Microsoft, they can go straight to hell. The other thing we were talking about is the new Outlook, which is something that Microsoft's been trying to push on us for, what, about 2 years now?
Yeah.
Now, the first time I had some major issues with it is I had a client who has since passed away, but he called me up one day or texted me, and he said, I'm trying to open these Excel spreadsheets, but every time I do, it tells me I'm not licensed. And I'm like, I know you're licensed. What the frick is going on here? So I remote into the computer. I think I remoted in. I don't think I was on site. Regardless, doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. And I'm like, let me see what this thing's doing. So there was and to be fair, it was an Excel spreadsheet that was an attachment in his inbox. Okay. So I clicked it, told it I wanted to open it. It goes to open it, and it pops up and says, you need a Office 365 license. Click here to log in. Well, okay. So I logged in with his credentials, and it said, this is not correct. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Soon after that, I realized, wait a minute. This Outlook looks different.
Mm-hmm.
So I click the little slider. It does its little beep, bop, boop, flips, goes to the regular. Okay. Click on the spreadsheet to open it in inbox. Works perfectly.
The licensing didn't seem to carry over to the new Outlook experience.
Right. Now, since then, I think they have fixed this, but yesterday I had another client, or was it Monday? Anyway, it was sometime this week. He texts me with a picture. Let me see if I can pull the picture up and share with the class. Something went wrong. Get my spectacles so I can actually read. I know you've probably seen that before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Something went wrong.
You're just overwhelmed with information.
We couldn't sign you in. If this error persists, contact your system administrator and provide the error code 800700005. Additional product information. All kinds of bullshit that does me no good. Server message. Access is denied. All right, cool. So the first thing was he told me, Somehow I got logged out of my email and I can't reset it on my own, which I don't allow them to do that. And I said, okay, and this was before he sent me this picture. So I reset his password and I sent it to him via text, you know, iMessage. And then he sends me that back. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have to get on here and see what's going on. And so I'm trying. I can't figure out what's going on. And then I realize, wait a minute, this is a new Outlook. So I do the little slider. It does this little beep, bop, boop.
Mm-hmm.
Brings up the old Outlook, but it wants me to log in, of course, because the password's changed. So you know how you get the Outlook, and then you get the little pop-up, and it's the Microsoft login.
Yeah.
So I put that in, and it goes away, and then it pops back up, and then it goes away, and then it pops back up, and then it goes away, and then it pops back up. It's not popping up for me to put anything in. It's churning is what it's doing. And I'm like, what in the... So... I finally had to task kill Outlook to get out of that nonsense. And I went into the Windows accounts and I found up under the, this is Windows 10. So it's like up under the other accounts and it'll list like Microsoft accounts that are connected. I just removed everyone that was in there because they've had some turnover in the last 5 years, different managers. So I removed everybody. And then I opened up Word. Because I find that I can do that. I open up Word, go in and log back in, make sure it's properly licensed.
Mm-hmm.
Once I did all of that bullshit, brought Outlook up, brought his email up, all because he wasn't paying attention. Nothing against him, but because I had another guy there that's actually kind of my right-hand man to do stuff for me when I can't get there. And he's like, should we use the new Outlook? And I'm like, no, do not. And he's like, well, it keeps popping up and saying, hey, you should try the new Outlook. Oh, and it's also saying the Windows support for Windows 10 is going to expire soon. And I'm like, yes, I know this.
It's a fucking year out. Don't call me.
Yeah. I'm like, it's fine. It's fine. You know, it'll be okay.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, is it pretty? Sure, but I don't think it's ready for production, Outlook, the new Outlook. I don't.
Well, it doesn't have to be ready. It's, I mean, Microsoft's policy is ship it. We'll just fix it later.
Fix it post.
We have millions of software testers. We can fire all the monkeys in the testing department. We
just
roll it out and see what breaks.
That reminds me of Barnacles. He used to be a software developer for Microsoft, and when he was in one of those major firing layoffs, and he pointed that out, he was like, yeah, they got rid of all the testers, all the QA people. He said, because why should they pay them when they've got us?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, I know. And he was pissed. I mean, he'd been there like 15 years or something. So I can imagine.
I mean, software development is a massive skill. It's an incredible skill set. It requires knowledge in many areas, but they're just treated like cattle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's nuts.
It is. It is. Tyler would probably have something to say about that too.
Boy. Well, he's not a developer though.
Yeah, he is.
I thought he was a security engineer.
More
on the administrative back end side.
He is. I say, what can I say? He was instrumental. Their CAPTCHA is a large portion of that is him. But yeah, he's a software developer / engineer.
Okay. I just thought he was working on the back end of the cloud in the security.
Yeah. Well, it's the WAF section, which is basically the firewalling part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they, you know, I never would have thought, but apparently the CAPTCHA is part of the firewalling team. So, So yeah, I mean, he has to write a lot of code, or he has. He's doing a lot of more planning administrative stuff now. But but anyway, have you ever heard of the app Earnify?
Not even once.
Okay, so it's a BP thing. It's
British Petroleum.
Yes. So here in Tifton, a couple of years ago, over on Jordan and 319, mm-hmm. they built that new Amoco station over there.
Yeah.
All right. And because I go over there to that way to get to the Walmart super center to get groceries on Friday or whatever, I started getting gas there. One of the reasons is because Inmark stopped responding to the NFC in my phone for some reason. I used to get my gas at Walmart, but I want to pay with my fucking phone, okay? There's a reason.
Why? Because it's 2024?
Because, yeah,
you
exactly.
You think you're special?
I think I am special. I want to pay with my freaking phone. So the other day, I was there getting gas, and they had a QR code. And granted, these are obnoxious gas pumps that have nice color screens and inundate you with video ads constantly.
Yeah.
You know? All right. So the tech is cool. So there's a QR code, and it was like, hey, get 10 cents per gallon off if you use the Earnify and connect it to your Amazon Prime. And I was like, oh, 10 cents per gallon? Yes, please. So I snapped that, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to figure this damn thing out. So mm-hmm. you go and you get the Earnify app, and then you connect your Prime account to it. Now, the question I had was, how much of a freaking hassle is this going to be? Because I'm accustomed to, I walk up, I put my phone, I go, cheese, so it can, you know, do the face mm-hmm. ID, and then it starts doing its little thing, authorizing, and I go on my merry way of filling up the vehicle, and et cetera, et cetera. So you load the Earnify app, and it uses your location services, and it says, okay, the closest gas station that we support is the one over on Jordan Road. I'm like, oh, that's neat. So the other day I needed to get gas in my car. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to try this. Save a little bit of money, right? So I get over there, and I bring it up, and along the bottom there's an option that says fuel. Now, if you try that option and you're not close by one of the gas stations, it will tell you you need to get to one of the locations that we support. I'm like, okay. So I'm sitting there. I pop it. It comes up, waits like a couple of seconds, and it says, gives me a row of numbers. It says, choose your pump. Really? Okay, so I get out. I'm at pump 5. What is this thing about to do? Now, keep in mind, I've never once gotten up to the NFC, nothing. Mm-hmm. I did tie my credit card in the Earnify app. I click 5. It starts doing something on the screen, and the next thing I know, it says, unlocking pump. I look over at the screen on the pump, and it says, authorizing. Okay. Then that screen over there on the pump says, pick up the handle and choose your, you know, fuel. Mm-hmm. So I do that. I start pumping. This one's on my phone switches to fueling.
So do you see the meter running on your phone too?
No, that would have been cool. Nah. But, you know, I mean, it's an animated thing, right. But it knew that I was in the process of fueling. So it did its thing. And then whenever it was done, I put it back up. It said, printing your receipt. Well, it couldn't because it was somebody had left their receipt, and apparently there was no more paper. So I pulled
theirs
out.
That's typical.
Yeah. Throw it away. And so at no point did I ever touch, other than selecting the fuel type and the handle, touch that gas pump. I unlocked it with my phone, and it automatically charged my credit card and then gave me, it gives you points, and you can redeem those points. Like 300 points, I think, will give you another 5 cents per gallon off or something like that.
Can you spend your points on cinnamon bears? That's a very important question.
200 points, you can go in and get $2 off in an in-store purchase, or you can get 5 cents per gallon off. 400 points will give you 10 cents per gallon off, or $4 off of an in-store purchase. 600 points, 800 points, et cetera, et cetera.
At what point can I get cinnamon bears?
Do they sell them?
Nobody sells them.
I don't even know what a cinnamon bear is.
That's the topic for next time.
Okay. All right. Cool. But yeah, see, I get fuel savings, 5 cents. I get Prime member savings, 5 cents. And then it says Prime member bonus, 2 fill-ups remaining, 12.2, I can get 15 cents per gallon off. Hmm. So instead of paying 2.999, I paid 2.899 for my gas. So you might want to check it out if you'd like to save money on gas or diesel. Or
when gas was $4.20, the 10-cent offer I just thought was an insult.
Yeah.
With a 10-gallon tank, I'm going to spend $40 and I'm going to save a dollar. What a great opportunity to save some money.
I know.
Just pass you some information, some personal data. No thanks.
Well, now that it's down to, you know, around $3 to
$2. Under four, I'm just happy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But I was impressed, and I guess, you know, I'm just easy. But
well, I'm impressed that it worked.
I was impressed that it worked.
It's a really neat idea.
Yeah.
Because it's rather interactive.
That's what impressed me.
You tell it what pump you're at, and
yeah,
it's done. But they can't automate the reloading of the fucking receipt paper. I think the last three times I've fueled up, I couldn't get a receipt from the pump.
The only reason why I normally don't care for receipts, it's just wasted paper, because I'm going to take it, I'm going to put it right back there in the shredder anyway.
No, I keep them all.
But I have heard of instances. I had a friend who was at the gas pump one day. He told me the story. He was at the gas pump. He got his gas. He got the receipt, and he left the store. Well, a few minutes later, a cop chases his ass down, and the cop pulls him over and said, the store owner said you didn't pay for the gas. And he's like, pulls out the receipt and says, right, yeah, I did. And the cop looks at it and goes, my apologies, go on your way. That's the only reason why I've ever been concerned about getting receipts. But as long as I can pull up on my phone and show them the transaction in the credit card that says Amoco, you know, it's like, you see this? Yes. Okay. But yeah, that's the only reason, because there's no need for me to keep receipts. I mean, what's the point? I don't, you know, as far as the business is concerned, I write it off by mileage. I don't write it off by cost or anything like that. So I do track my mileage. I use MileIQ, which is on my phone.
For you?
It's worked well. I've used it for about 5 years now or so.
I remember when it started and then Microsoft bought it. Does Microsoft still have it?
Google has it.
Google has it.
Yeah. As far as I know, because I get it out of the Google store.
Hmm.
It used to be owned by, I thought it was owned by, Quicken or whatever that company is, Intuit. Yeah, I thought it was owned by them.
I swear Microsoft bought it because it was included with something we had or...
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think it seems like they got rid of it.
I don't know if it'll tell me. Oh, I got to classify two drives. Yes, I did go somewhere today. Thank you. help. Third party. Copyright. Oh, thank you. Copyright is MileIQ Incorporated, 2012 to 2023.
Yeah, so they're not... They're not owned.
So, all right, whatever. Yeah, this has really come in handy because I just get the reports at the end of the year when I'm filing my taxes and just key that information into TurboTax and go on because, you know, I don't have a fancy schmancy accountant doing all my stuff for me. I checked with your accountant and they told me it was going to cost me $2,000 for him to file my taxes. And I said, oh, I appreciate that. I'll keep that in mind.
Hmm.
So,
that's certainly not the relationship I expected.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, and I cannot remember her name, and I wouldn't even say who it was. I'd tell you all fair if I could remember. I'd go back and look at my emails, but I had questions about converting over to an S-Corp and basically what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And she answered all my questions, no charge. And I said, well, you know, I think this was back in January before I filed my taxes. And I was like, what do we need to do? How much would it cost me? And she told me it would cost like $400 to file the taxes and do this. Anyway, it wound up to be about $2,000 every year to file this stuff. And I was like, I don't think it's worth it. Not yet.
I think that's probably, no, that's, I don't think that's, I mean, I think my quarterly bill's gone up to $175 from $150. That's where they handle the quarterly payroll taxes, and because we actually run a payroll.
Mm-hmm.
And then the filings at the end of the year, they do the business and then they take that because it's an S corp. They need that done before my personal income tax is done.
Yep.
And then they do that. I think about overall, it could hit $2,000 over the year.
Yeah.
I think the tax filing at, you know, tax time.
Yeah. That's what got me is I was like, oh, that's expensive.
But it's expensive, but I don't have to touch it. They sign.
I mean, that's...
They sign as the preparer.
Yeah.
They do all that stuff.
I mean, that's...
I buy this truck, I don't know how to do that shit. I just tell him I bought this.
Yeah.
And here's the papers. And that's just.
Well, that's, I mean, I guess in your situation, like you, the company bought the truck.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, Donovan would buy his truck because I'm not set up that way. And that's what I was trying to figure out is the cost benefit ratio at the point of where do I make enough money in the year that it makes sense to be able to do that? Because I do understand that there's the benefit of the cash disbursements that you can do. You can pull money out of it, and there's all kind of tax benefits for doing that. But I'm not there yet.
I did it that way, not for any, I don't know tax codes, shit. I don't know what's more beneficial. I did it this way because it's a separate entity.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I started it with the retail shop.
Yeah.
I had employees.
Yeah.
I needed to do a payroll. I need this structure.
Yeah.
So if I were to acquire another MSP, all of a sudden I've got employees. I just flip switches. Everything's set. I can just flip switches and turn on payroll and add them to the payroll and everything's done. I don't have to restructure anything just to have a company.
Right.
I mean, it is more expensive this way, but I want to grow. I just got to find the right reason to do it.
Well, like I said, I look at it every couple of years and I was like, yeah, maybe it makes sense. I don't know. But when she hit me with the 2000 and I didn't have the 2000 and I knew how much it was going to cost me to file my taxes, I was like, yeah, no. Yeah. It cost me $250 a year to file my taxes. And that's because I'm,
if it works for you.
Yeah. So far it has.
I'm not going to tell you how to do it.
So far it has. And I'm trying not to do this anymore, but I haven't been paying quarterly taxes. I've just been paying the penalty at the end of the year because the penalty was nothing. It was negligible. But I've started trying to actually go ahead and at least pay one or two quarters so that I get to that threshold where I don't have to pay the penalty. But I found out there's a lot of people, single member LLCs and proprietorships and stuff like that. They do that. It's just not worth, trying to keep up with the quarterly stuff if you're, don't have a situation like you have where you have somebody else do it. Mm-hmm. Just pay the penalty at the end of the year. And here's the funny thing. The penalty from the state is worse than the penalty from the federal government.
Well, the state needs the money more.
I guess so. So, I don't know. Anyway, now we actually might actually, get into something here. You know us. 1 week? Oh, it's still a two-hour show. All right. So, ChatGPT can now read some of your Mac's desktop apps. Did you look at that one?
No, I apologize. I didn't have time to go over the show notes today.
That's what you got me for, since I'm the one that puts most of them in here anyway.
You are.
I am. So OpenAI's ChatGPT, I can't even speak, desktop app for Mac OS now allows the chatbot to read code directly from several coding apps, including VS Code, Xcode, TextEdit, Terminal, and iTerm 2. I know a couple of those.
Mm-hmm.
This feature, called Work with Apps, enables developers to work more seamlessly by automatically sending code to ChatGPT for context without needing to copy-paste. And while ChatGPT can analyze code and provide suggestions, it can't directly write code into these apps, unlike tools like GitHub Copilot. Currently focused on coding apps, the feature is available to Plus and Teams users, with a rollout plan for enterprise and educational users. ChatGPT relies on macOS's accessibility API to read text, but cannot interpret visual elements like images or object orientation. This approach is seen as a step toward creating general-purpose AI agents, with OpenAI reportedly working on an agent codenamed Operator, anticipated for early 2025, which we've got that one further down in the show notes. That's interesting, but I have a side story. Something I tried trying to follow in your footsteps a little bit on some things. So this issue that we've had with TrueVista, I was like, okay, trying to find the best way to specifically this one client, I need to be able to know when their VPN goes down. The easiest way to do that is just ICMP, ping, just ping it. If it goes down, if it's off for like 10, 15 seconds, shoot me an email. And so I came across this program. I cannot remember the name of it, but it's kind of heavy, but it's a free program up to 5 hosts. You install it on a workstation. It literally installs the workstation version of 2S because it needs to run a web server for some ungodly reason. Yeah, there is a Windows application, and it does its thing. Now, the one thing that I have discovered is apparently it doesn't work, or I've misconfigured something because it hasn't sent me a damn email yet. And we did have an incident Monday night. So I was like, can I write just a simple little ping tool?
Seems easy enough.
So I was chatting with Tyler, and so I was like, I'm going to try something. Now, Tyler is the software engineer. So I went in the ChatGPT, and I had to keep refining it. But the first thing I did was basically told it, I said, write me C-sharp code that will allow me to add hosts that need to be pinged a certain number of times, and if they don't respond within a certain number of pings, email me, plus give me the ability to configure the SMTP settings and all this other kind of stuff. And then I finessed that down.
Yeah.
I sent the code to Tyler, because in ChatGPT, you can actually do a share and share that session up to that point. I sent that to him, and he said, now it created a console app. I said, yeah. He said, I wonder if it can create a GUI. So, well, let me find out. So I'm still in the same session. I go in there and I said, create me a graphical user interface for this code. So it creates the designer. I sent him all that again. He's like, I doubt this is going to compile. He shot back a couple of minutes later. He goes, holy shit. He sends me a screenshot. He said, it's not fancy. And he said, there were one or two bugs I had to fix. He said, but it fucking compiled.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God.
This is surprisingly good at coding.
Yeah.
It'll miss some things, but
he was amazed. One of the things it was, you know, where you put in the SMTP information, the username or the email address, he said it even made the password field a password field. And I was like, he thought that was cool. The fact that it was smart enough to know that.
Yeah.
So I've actually been trying to play around with it. I installed Visual Studio 2022 on this machine over here, and he created a, what do you call, a stub file or something. Anyway, he put it all in a folder, and I pulled it over, and I've been opening it up as a project, playing around with it, trying to get it to, because I'm an old Visual Basic programmer, so C Sharp is
a little heavier,
yeah. a little more foreign to me. I've been playing around with that a little bit, so I kind of got the bug after the stuff that you started playing around with, and I was like, can it really do this? Because I remember reading where a guy, early days of ChatGPT, got it to write a WordPress plugin, and he was amazed that it actually did it as well as it did.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, it missed some things at that point, like it didn't sanitize the input and some other stuff like that that he had to fix. But
it gets you a good skeleton to work with instead of having to build the whole thing from scratch. I mean, it's not...
That's what I was after.
It's not your developer. It's, build that framework for you, and then you can just fine tune it.
Yeah. That's what I thought was interesting. And I mean, it created all the different, it was like, here's the main.cs file. Here's the main designer.cs file. You need to, and it also gave me instructions. It told me I needed to use NuGet and install this other package in Visual Studio for it to do JSON stuff and all of that. And I was like, this is like over my damn head, but I'm getting it, you know?
I had it write a web crawler.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
And then I had it refine it. I was like, I need to keep track of where we've crawled. So I was like, okay, we'll use SQLite. And it gave me this schema and everything.
Told you how to set everything up, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just wrote to Python, and we're just like, we don't have to do shit because SQLite's already there.
Yeah, it's already, yeah.
So the Python is going to create that database. And
wow.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool.
I've been using it mainly just for summarizations. I was really impressed.
You're only using about $5 worth.
Yeah, of my 20. Yeah. Yeah. That one came in clutch, as the kids say.
Mm-hmm.
So I was impressed with that. I'm not sure I'm not really sure I understand or I'm the level of being impressed about this, reading some of the Mac's desktop apps. I guess it can just get even better from what it is now.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll work with Apple.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't develop on a Mac.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't normally develop anyway, but.
Well, if you want to write an iPhone app.
Yeah. Years ago, I started playing around with Xcode and then realized that I just didn't have the brain matter that it requires.
Yeah, that's a crazy environment. I mean, I just come from this simple world of, well, it's not so simple now. It's Visual Studio, but the Eclipse IDE, and we use, and it's not intuitive to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in Visual Studio and I was like, why is this when I right click on this? Why? Because it generates, for those that don't know, I mean, whenever you create like a wind form or whatever in Visual Studio, it actually creates the code behind it that actually tells it how to draw that.
Yeah.
So that's what ChatGPT did. It created that code. So I was like, okay, I want to actually have the graphical representation. I want the designer itself so I can move these boxes around. And it took me a little bit to figure out because I kept everybody said, just right click on the file, go to view designer. The view designer option wasn't fucking there. It took me a little bit to finally figure out that I was, I guess it was because I wasn't opening it up as a solution. I was opening it up as just the folder.
Yeah.
So once I turned around and I moved it to another location and said, hey, open a solution. And it was like, where should I look for these? And I said, right here. And it opened it up and I right clicked on it and I had the option to view designer. And I was like, oh, this is cool. So, well, since we're talking about this, I'll jump down to this. OpenAI is developing an advanced AI agent codenamed Operator designed to perform everyday tasks such as writing code or booking travel. Scheduled for release in January of 2024. I think they meant 2025. The tool will initially launch as a research version and be available via API for developers. This initiative aligns with broader industry trend toward creating AI agents capable of handling multi-step tasks with minimum supervision. This reminds me of something. You mentioned something about agents when you were talking about developing some stuff that could just, you know, handle some of the ticketing or do some of the stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'd like for when a ticket comes in, especially an automated ticket from the RMM, it can see that, read into it. But then if the issue isn't clear, like disk IO issue, it can go, all right, well, I know what machine that's on, and then go look in the machine and pick it apart and find the issue and either recommend I don't want this thing making corrections.
Yeah, just recommend.
I would just, hey, pinpoint the issue and maybe add that information to the ticket. And count that ticket as responded to.
Right.
That's the big thing. Just go out and with what you have available, see if you can figure out why this ticket came in.
Do you think there's a good possibility, like, you know, I use Enable and you put agents on the machines that report back to the dashboard, to the RMM. They're probably working on that kind of technology to going in their own agents right now. If they're not, they're idiots. But they should be doing some type of AI.
Also, I would like it for what we in our industry call prospecting. But if I pick up a new client, I'd like to deploy an agent on the network just to go enumerate things, find any switch configurations that are or could be better.
Yeah.
And just make recommendations for improving this network. I think that'd be cool.
It's kind of something like the way, I don't know if it makes recommendations, but there's a program called BellArc, I think is
the BellArc Advisor.
BellArc Advisor. Yeah. I actually had a client, they were looking at adding, there's a couple of companies out there. I forget the name of the company that they were looking at. But anyway, it was for some additional like backup methodologies, their own version of MDR, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I was going along with it. I was like, hey, we'll look at it. You know, you decide it was going to work, run them like $400 or $500 a month on top of what I charged them. Anyway, he remoted into the server and he ran BellArc and just to get all that information. And the funny thing was, is they come back with like, we didn't see a firewall. Cause you know, they're coming to me looking, going, well, they say that they didn't see this and this and this. And I'm looking at it going, you're absolutely right. There is no firewall running on the damn server because that irritates the shit out of me. There's no need for it. So there is a firewall to protect the entire network.
Mm-hmm.
And there was all these other little things, ancillary things. And I was like, okay, yeah. It spits out. Have you ever used it? It spits out a tremendous amount of data.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
I have had a different tool because I didn't like BellArc Advisor. It seems like it outputs in HTML. Gives you a web page with all that shit in it.
It does.
I found a different one. I don't know if it's current, but it's called System Information for Windows.
That sounds familiar.
I mean, I bought a license, like a $30 license. But it was just it's a graphical program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sectioned out. It gives you everything that it found.
I was thinking Microsoft made something like that, too.
That's likely. Could be one of those power tools.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Well, competitors like Anthropic, Microsoft, and Google are also advancing similar tools, with Anthropic introducing a real-time task handling agent, Microsoft developing AI for email and document management. That could be interesting.
Fucking nightmare.
OpenAI's most advanced project involves a browser-based agent signaling a potential breakthrough in practical AI applications. And CEO Sam Altman has highlighted the development of agents as a pivotal milestone for the AI field. What browser-based agent do they have? I'm not familiar with that.
I don't know.
Me either. I swear, there's never a show that we aren't going to talk about some AI stuff because it's constantly... I think it's in practically every damn...
There's daily announcements.
Yeah, every tech podcast I listen to, there's at least one or two articles.
Yeah.
Something they talk about. So I know you don't have Netflix.
I do.
You do have Netflix. That's right. You do have Netflix. So did you see the Tyson-Jake Paul fight?
Yeah, I was up with everybody else who was disappointed in that event.
Did you really watch it?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have buffering issues?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right.
No, I don't think I had during the... Paul Tyson fight, but mm-hmm. just, you know, in a couple in the fights leading up and then in the all talking before the fight,
mm-hmm.
but it finally cleared up and I may have just paused. I could have been running like 5 minutes behind. That I figured maybe that'll help on my buffering issue.
So NFL and WWE fans are worried after Netflix Tyson versus Paul streaming disaster. Netflix streaming of the highly anticipated Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul fight at AT&T Stadium faced several technical issues, including constant buffering and blurry visuals, which disrupted the viewing experience during the undercard bouts. These problems caused an outpouring of frustration from fans on social media, as many questioned Netflix's preparedness for such a high-demand live event. It raises concerns as Netflix prepares to stream NFL games on Christmas Day.
This Christmas?
Yes. And transition of WWE Raw to its platform in January. Fans have expressed skepticism about Netflix's ability to handle large-scale live sports broadcasts, potentially impacting their trust in the platform for upcoming events. But Netflix has come out and said, don't worry about it, guys. We got you. We learned a lot. It'll be good.
Has anyone said how many people they had?
60 million.
60 million simultaneous viewers?
That's the number I saw.
I mean, that's quite a feat. Just to do it as well as they did.
Yeah.
And how many people are going to be watching a fucking NFL game or a WWE match? Well, I would guess fewer than 60 million.
I can tell you it'd be minus one for me because I don't watch either one of those. But
I have no interest. I'll watch football if it's on.
Yeah.
I'm not going to turn it on Christmas Day, but I don't watch wrestling. So if they can pull that off, 60 million simultaneous viewers at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, simultaneous means.
I mean, redundancy, right?
Right. So if they can pull that off, you know, they're going to be fine with the 300 or 400 people watching wrestling. Because honestly, if it's on Netflix, I don't have to watch it live.
Oh, my bad. 108 million global viewers turned in for the fight. I just looked it up.
Okay.
108 million.
All right. So you were a little off, but still. You can deliver that. You can deliver a wrestling match to 300 or 400 people.
Paul says 120 million viewers watched it. So while the tech firm later stated 60 million households around the world. So it's between 60 and 120 million.
Okay. Well, either way.
Either way. That is, I mean,
120 million, that's half the goddamn country.
Well, this is global.
Oh.
Yeah, this is a global number.
All right.
I mean, half the fucking country did go stupid a couple of weeks ago, but I don't think
that was more than half, Donovan. they called it a landslide.
If a landslide is the difference of 2.5 million votes,
I didn't call it a landslide.
I didn't either. I didn't either.
I mean, that doesn't constitute a landslide to me. It was decisive, but not.
It was the biggest landslide ever.
In the history of our country.
In the history of our country. Better than Reagan.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So, yeah, it's still impressive. What say then that maybe they used this fight as a testing bed?
I think I tweeted to that effect.
Did you?
Yeah.
It would make sense. I mean, I wouldn't show my cards that that's what we did, but it'd be like,
but yeah, let's take this fight. It doesn't matter one bit.
Exactly.
And yeah, we'll try it. And you know what? I'm sure they did learn a lot. And if they have to serve it to 120 million households again, they'll know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because the way Netflix works now, what I wonder too, they've got to be doing it this way. Netflix puts caching servers in like ISP head ends or, you know, colos and places like that. Matter of fact,
I just assumed that they had used a CDN.
Well, they used to put caching servers. I know that CityNet/Plant had one in their head in, or either it was up at GPW in Atlanta.
Hmm.
So anyway, so I could see that where basically they send that one stream and then that caching server is going to send it out to however many clients on TruVista is watching it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the way they still do it or not. Maybe they do go to like an Akamai or something like that, CDN. Yeah. But I mean, I can't imagine there's this one huge honking server at Netflix HQ just dishing out 120 million streams.
That's not how it works.
No, that's not the way it works. But I didn't give a shit
especially
about
when the fight's in Arlington.
Yeah. I didn't give a shit about the fight. Number one, I can't stand Jake Paul. Number two, I can't stand Logan Paul. Mike Tyson had nothing to prove at 59 years old. I mean, Sylvester Stallone actually came out and told Jake Paul that basically Tyson was playing with him. You know, he basically said, you know, this is an example of a master class in acting because he basically could have fucked you up and he didn't.
I so wanted him to.
Yeah. But the way I look at it, Jake Paul got 40 million. Tyson got 20. That's how much money was in that fight.
That's what I had read too.
So,
like, yeah, everybody wins.
Yeah.
And the points don't matter.
It's, I mean, like, at 50...
Whose line is it anyway?
You know what? At 59 years old, I would have gotten my damn dome rung for $20 million. I wouldn't have cared, you know?
I think from what I've read, what other people have written, is that Tyson got paid more because he didn't knock Jake Paul out.
Yeah, I've read somewhere that somebody said that that was in the contract, that he could not, like, uppercut or something.
I had heard that.
I don't know if that's true or not, but...
I would have paid Tyson $20 million to do it.
If you had $20 million, we wouldn't be sitting here.
I said would have, you know, all circumstances.
Who are you now? The southern version of Elon Musk? I mean, come on.
Not at all.
Well, I guess we'll see. I got a friend of mine, Sam, who is big into wrestling, and so I think he's looking. I'm going to presume he has Netflix. I know he's been complaining about the fact that it was taken off of some other streaming service that he used to be able to get it on.
Mm-hmm.
So it going to it's such an oddity. They're basically pulling it off of used to be on USA or Sci-Fi or any of those, and now it's just going to be Netflix only. I mean,
I talked about it a couple of weeks ago. They moved the Xfinity Racing series. Through the CW,
yeah, that's right. That's right.
And through the CW app, I can't watch the race live. I can watch it the next day on the CW app.
Huh. No live feed. Oh, that's wild.
I guess I'm not watching it.
Yeah. They just give you what you want. People wouldn't have to steal.
Oh, I'm not stealing it. It's not worth.
Yeah, I know.
That for me.
Yeah. It's just an inconvenience and it's an aggravation. I understand that. So Gmail's new shielded email feature lets users create aliases for email privacy. The thing about this one is I kept seeing these headlines pop up that was like,
Gmail makes changes affecting 2 billion users.
And the other one is, create a new email account now before G. And I'm like,
fucking clickbait.
What?
Bullshit, asshole.
Because all this is this is the same type of thing that Apple.
Shit, I could do any email service.
Well, and Apple does it by default too. I mean, yeah. If it obscures it, but it's not like it's some new thing, but they're developing a new shielded email feature. I love how it had to have a name, shielded email, enabling users to create single-use email aliases to improve privacy and combat spam. These aliases forward messages to the primary account, allowing users to sign up for services without revealing their real email address. Concept is not new, of course. Apple's Hide My Email introduced similar functionality in 2021 for iCloud Plus subscribers, which I am. Other providers like Bitwarden and DuckDuckGo also offer comparable privacy features. I did not know that Bitwarden did that, but I don't need it. The shielded email feature complements Google's broader efforts to enhance online security, such as virtual card numbers for safer payments and the new Android System Key Verifier app, which secures end-to-end encryption through key verification. All right. So, yay.
Yeah.
How many times do you use like a throwaway email for signing up for something like that?
I don't. I just use the Gmail one.
Me most of the time, too.
Because spam filters are pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes, now, if I have an option to log in, there's a lot of sites now or a service, and I have the option of logging in with my Gmail account, or I have an option to log in with the Apple account. I have used the Apple account, and it automatically generates this D7394-something-something, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And, of course, then I have to make sure that that is now in my Bitwarden app, because I'll never know what the hell that is used to log in. But that's the only time I've ever done that. Is, and a lot of the domains that I own, I use Cloudflare's email routing service so that, you know, they will handle the incoming email for, say, like, I've got a domain called knowthenerds.com. Mm-hmm. It was an idea back whenever I was first forming the company. My wife said, you know, you should call it something whimsical. So I was like, yeah, whatever. So I bought the domain. I still have it because I use it for a lot of other things. And one of the things is if I need an email specifically, let's say for a client for some service or something, I will just go to Cloudflare and I'll create an alias, and then I'll say, anything coming to this goes over here.
Yeah.
And it just handles it, and it's free. I don't have to do it. I don't pay Cloudflare anything. I use all of their services for free, every bit of it. And it's pretty awesome. Hmm. I use I have services that I run on this network here that I can get to because I run a Proxmox container that connects back to them, and I create these tunnels. And then you can assign host names to those tunnels, and you can type it and it goes straight and comes right in. And you can add security on top of that so that if you need to get to it, it'll prompt you for an email address, the email address that you have registered for said service on your local network. And then it will email you a 5 or 6 digit code that you then have to put in. And then you can control, hey, this is good for 30 minutes, this is good for 60 minutes, it's good for 24 hours or whatever. And so then if you have to come back later and it's past that threshold, you have to get another code. I do that for getting into certain, like, Proxmox instances that I run for other clients if I don't have a VPN to them that I can fire up.
Yeah.
And it works great. It's like some of the stuff that they do for free, it just, wild. One I saw today, don't hold down the control key. New warning as cyber attacks are confirmed. Cyber attacks are becoming increasingly sophisticated with two-step phishing, which is known as 2SP, and scalable vector graphics, SVG, file-based methods emerging as notable threats. Two-step phishing involves the use of trusted platforms and seemingly harmless files, such as Microsoft Visio. When I heard that, I was like, wow, that takes me back. I haven't used Visio in a while. It's a .vsdx document to deliver malicious content in layers that evade detection. Victims are often tricked into activating malicious links by holding down the control key, bypassing automated security systems. Did you realize that holding down the control key, basically what I think they're saying is you hold down a control key, open the file, and it bypasses some of the security.
I was aware there was a shortcut, but I can't remember exactly what that did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a habit of holding down the control key when I open a file.
Me either. I mean, if you want to, let's say you're in a web browser and you want to force it to open it, I think it's control, is it control or shift?
That
you
can open what?
Open it up into another tab.
Control.
Yeah, control will do that. So I'm thinking that's
in a new tab. Shift click opens in a new window.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. These things, sometimes I just do them, but my brain's like,
my pinky's right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I just do it. So the SVG attachments exploit their textual nature to execute JavaScript or display credential stealing forms, further evading traditional security tools. To counter these threats, experts recommend vigilance. That's all you need is vigilance. With email attachments, verifying senders, employing two-factor authentication, educating users about emerging phishing tactics. How often have you tried to educate your users, honestly? I thought about actually holding a class for a couple of my clients, you know, and getting everybody in their conference rooms. I don't think it's worth it.
It might be if you present it in a particular way that makes them question more things. I can't see it hurting. But you can't go in nuance all of the types of attacks.
Yeah.
Don't open SVG files. All right, see ya.
Basically what I tell people, my blanket statement is, were you expecting it?
Yeah.
If you were expecting it, is it what you were expecting?
Mm-hmm.
Because even then it's like you can't say, well, do you know the person it's from? Do they normally send you these types of things? It can be spoofed. I mean, the number of times we've had instances, I mean, I had a client that, you know, I had to crack down and tighten up their email last year or earlier this year because the person who dealt with paying the bills was getting emails from the comptroller telling her, you need to handle this and the money needs to go here and here and here. And because of the nature, the tone of the emails, it made this person get up, go walk into the comptroller's office and say, look, I don't know what's going on here, but you don't need to talk to me this way. I just need help. And the comptroller's going, what the hell are you talking about? Come to find out, no.
She didn't send those.
She didn't send those. And that was one of the sneakier attacks that I'd seen.
I had a scary one. Client's banker called him. Like, all right, stop by and sign these papers whenever you want. He's talking about it was a request to move $60,000 somewhere. He's like, I didn't. But he didn't.
Yeah.
Send it off without your signature. Like, let's lock that shit down.
Oh, definitely. Mm-mm-mm. So educating users about emerging phishing tactics, these measures are crucial as cyber fraud evolves, shifting from generic to highly targeted attacks such as CEO fraud, AI-powered scams, sophisticated ransomware schemes. With International Fraud Awareness Week spotlighting these developments, organizations are urged to adopt dynamic AI-driven defenses to combat the growing complexity of cyber threats. So the cyber threats are now being powered by AI, so we have to use AI to fight against them.
Fight fire with fire.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I was on a web call or a web conference last week with the Kronos. There was nothing new in there, but maybe they're starting to integrate some AI into the part of their offering is an RMM sort of thing.
I thought they were primarily backup.
Yeah, it was backup and XDR and
then doing everything now.
Data protection. It's a whole suite.
Okay.
But apparently they've got part of their management capability, you can write something you want to do on that machine and it'll spit out the code in PowerShell and you can run it from there. I'm sure it'll get more useful.
Right. As we say, it's the worst that it's ever going to be right now. It's only going to get better.
Yeah. On our side. And it's only going to get worse coming in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this one's come about in the last day or two. The DOJ wants to force Google Chrome to be sold.
Yeah, I caught a whiff of that this morning. I didn't read much into it.
So the U.S. Department of Justice, the DOJ, of course, is reportedly seeking to force Google to sell its Chrome browser and impose measures to reduce the tech giant's dominance in search and advertising. Sources indicate that the DOJ aims to break Google's control over Chrome, which is used by 61% of internet users, to create a more competitive landscape. Additional remedies could include stricter data licensing rules, transparency for advertisers, and limits on Google's use of user data for search and artificial intelligence. Rather than calling for the sale of Android, the DOJ is focusing on separating the Android operating system from Google's other services, such as its search engine and Play Store, which are currently bundled. Google, of course, opposes these proposals, claiming they would harm consumers, developers, and U.S. technological innovation. The DOJ might reserve the forced sale of Chrome as a contingency if other remedies fail. Critics argue that such broad measures risk being overturned on appeal, as occurred in the Microsoft antitrust case in 2001. Google plans to challenge the DOJ's efforts, maintaining that the proposed actions go beyond the case's legal scope. How do you feel about that?
Same way I felt about Microsoft and the antitrust stuff 20 years ago.
And that was?
I think it was in the EU. They were forcing Microsoft to separate Internet Explorer from Microsoft Windows.
Right.
I don't see what the government's business is in that. Why would I don't see Google having a monopoly in the browser business. There are a lot of users. I'm not one of them anymore. I make my choices. I don't see how it's protecting the American public by making them sell Chrome to whom?
Yeah, I mean, who's going to do it?
And what are they going to do with it?
Sell it to Microsoft? No.
isn't Chrome just a wrapper around the Chromium browser?
Pretty much. I mean, Edge is based
Chromium,
on Chromium.
Yeah.
You know, after their initial bullshit they tried to come out with.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I understand their rationale. I don't agree with it, but they're saying basically, look, Chrome, having 61% of the market, collects data that feeds into Google's main revenue source, advertising. Once you get right down to it, Google is nothing but an advertising company. That's it. It started out with noble goals of being the best search engine that we ever had at the time. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. Now it's complete and utter shit.
I think they've removed do no evil from their mission statement.
They did. They did that several years ago. And so from the DOJ's perspective, they're like, you know, you've got an inroad into your advertising business that nobody else has. The way I look at it is this: build a better browser, build a better search engine, build a better advertising company to compete against them.
Yeah.
That's
allow competition. That's what they should do.
Yeah.
And not make somebody take their toys apart.
I mean, if that's going to be the case, at what point do they start looking at Microsoft again and going, well, you shouldn't make Edge.
You shouldn't have all of your, all the Windows OS's tied to Microsoft Cloud.
Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, the other thing too is the fact that I forget how much money it is. The other thing they don't like, and for a group of people that think that the free market is the way to run things, this just strikes me as hypocrisy. Google pays Apple, rather, to be the default search engine mm-hmm. on iOS devices.
Yeah.
The DOJ wants to break that too. They're like, no, you can't do that. You need to, when that device first fires up, it should prompt you basically, which search engine do you want to
use? I don't want to answer that question.
I don't want to answer that question. I can change it.
If I wanted to answer all those questions before I can use the fucking telephone, I would buy an Android device.
That's true. But the thing is, I mean, you can go in and change your search engine preferences.
Yeah. It's not anybody's fault that some people are too clueless to find it or to know that that's an option.
So I have no problem with the fact that Google pays Apple to do that. It's in the billions. I think it's like 20, 25, 100. I don't know. It's up there. It's a lot of damn money. But the DOJ is like, no, you can't do that. That's antitrust. I don't understand that. If you want competition, you want free market, you let these things play out. I don't know what the number was years and years ago, but 61% of internet users using Chrome is down from where it was at their peak. There was a while there that Chrome had at least, I would have to argue, had at least 75 or 80%, I would think.
I don't know.
You know, Internet Explorer had a huge amount in the early years before Chrome even come about.
Right.
Simply because it was the default in Windows. I saw no problem with that. And when Chrome came along and was a better browser, there's a lot of people started ditching Internet Explorer because it was shitty. IE6 and the fact that websites were built for it,
yeah,
was a terrible, terrible time.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the internet landscape, but
ActiveX controls and all that.
Oh my God. I mean, the concept was cool, but to me, it was too much like the client server motif of, you know, when the web was supposed to be open standards kind of thing. And it's like, you know, if you support HTML, that's all you needed. You know, that was all you needed. That's pretty much it. I skipped one story because I decided I didn't really care that much about it. It was about a DNA testing company vanishes along with its customers' genetic data.
23andMe?
No, Atlas Biomed. Never heard of them. Have you ever given any DNA?
No.
Yeah, me either. Me either.
And it was like, I don't want them to lose my shit. And then 15 years later, 23andMe is...
Yeah, they're going under.
Did they have a breach or...
I
can't remember if it was an attack or a lost laptop or
23andMe breach.
It doesn't matter. But no, that's the reason why.
October 2023, 23andMe reported a data breach that affected nearly half of its 14.1 million customers. And they're financially in trouble now. September 25th, 2024, 23andMe is in trouble. What happens to all the DNA data? Very good question. Yeah. What happens to it?
You know, if she had just stayed married to Sergey, and I think it's Sergey, they were married. But I found out long after the marriage was over that they weren't married.
Yeah, I always have to balance that. It's like, this stuff is cool versus this stuff can be misused. And where do I have
it's
to?
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
I'm interested in what I would find at Ancestry, but not that interested.
If I was going to trust a company, it would probably be Ancestry. If I was going to do that. And that's just because, I mean, I don't think they've ever had a data breach. I don't know that for certain. I've never heard of it. Not going to look it up. But the fact that their core thing was about your history, your heritage and all, that kind of makes sense. These little upstarts like 23andMe and all these other ones, it's just like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
No. So, all right. Well, hey, we actually got a short one this time. Ooh. I know, right? So, we will be back. Oh, God. Let me look at the date. So we're going to do 2 weeks from now. Dun, 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 dun. So, it will be the December, the Donovan, 1, 2, 3, 4, December 4th? I think it's December 4th.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, because December 2nd is a Monday. Yeah. So it'll be December 4th. So we're shooting for the 4th and then the 18th, which is the week before Christmas, unless you're going to be out of town
for that. No, I should be here.
Okay. All right. Christmas is on a Wednesday this year. Interesting. Yeah, I used to work, the company I used to work for before 2015, it was one of those where they always take a week off during the 4th of July because it was a plant.
Yeah.
And then they typically take the week off of Christmas. So they'll that was always fun. There's some upsides to that because, you know, when the whole plant is shut down, it's a little bit different than taking vacation. Like when used to take vacation at CityNet or plant, it was like, okay, I never took a week. I always took like a Friday or a Thursday and a Friday because I knew if I took a whole week off, then I come back and it's like, what the fuck's broken?
Yeah, you know? You can come back to a fire.
And I mean, it's not that I didn't, I mean, Walt and Chad, they handled everything, but it was just like, what did I miss? Whereas when you work for a company where the whole damn place shuts down, it's like, we ain't got to worry about shit. for a whole week.
That's a good time to make changes, though. Like re-rack servers.
Yeah.
Clean stuff up.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So if you got any questions or comments about this episode or any of the previous episodes, or if you've got some recommendations, give us some shout outs or what have you. The email is podcast@southgeeknews.com. You can also call and leave a voicemail. Send a text. That number is 229-234-1307. And just for as little as $5 a month, you can also get the membership benefits, which is where some of the stuff that doesn't make it into the main show winds up in the feed. You get it 7 days before anybody else does. So anyway, that is it. Hope everybody out there has a fantastic Thanksgiving. Something I said in my my personal podcast is like this Thanksgiving, if you got a big family, you know, try to let the political divides just fall to the wayside. Unless you've got racist assholes in your family, then, you know, don't talk to them. Don't let them come to the to your Thanksgiving. But everybody be cordial. Enjoy the food. Enjoy everybody's company. Watch football if that's your thing on Thanksgiving Day, et cetera, et cetera. But Ben and I will be back first week of December.
Yep.
So we'll see you then. Take care. Bye.
Ta-ta.
This has been a production of Tifton Media Works. Check out all our podcasts by visiting tiftonmediaworks.com.